Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Pro Wrestling Index. I'm your host as usual, Guy Drinkle. It has been a while. We didn't do a SummerSlam review, but I imagine me and Alex on the review of this one will get a chance to wax lyrical about a certain someone at that stage. But anyway, we will crack on with this one. This will be the Clash of Champions preview. And joining me is Tadiwa. How are you doing, birdie?
Yeah, I'm good. And yourself, Guy?
I'm all good. I'm good. I'm enjoying wrestling a bit more now. It's well, SmackDown wasn't the best this week. I think every other week it's been pretty good, apart from the weird couple storylines, I think it's fair to say. But WWE's definitely done an upturn in recent times.
It's almost as if there's a rival that's, you know, coming up and forcing them to be a bit more creative.
TNA. but yeah. AEW and bringing back Paul Heyman and stuff. Just stuff. It's all right. It's good. Before we get into the card, because there is 11 matches, not all of them are great, but it looks like a promising card at least. There is a couple bits of news. The first thing I kind of sprung on you when we started that you had missed somehow, you're normally the one up to date with the news, is that The Fiend wrestled after SmackDown. I don't know if it was a handicap match or it was just against one of them. I only saw the entrance and stuff like that. But The Fiend had a match after SmackDown went off the air, and hopefully it'll be on YouTube or whatever at some point, or on the network at some point. But yeah, The Fiend is not maybe a novelty for TV just yet, because they kind of want to keep him as a rarity, but bringing him out on a Madison Square Garden, it kind of shows the signs of promise, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think I was very worried, obviously, with, if you look at some of the other storylines WWE have had over the past, with their lack of patience with characters and maybe the lack of build that they have with regards to really, really big things. I'm sure we'll get into it later, but for example, the Four Horsewomen having their first ever like big tag match on the main roster, just, you know, on a normal Monday Night Raw, I thought was a bit of a missed opportunity. But with Bray Wyatt, they seem to be listening to, you know, the idea of being patient and just creating more value of and creating more interest in him. You know, the mystique that he has, you can't really be seeing that week in, week out. Otherwise, I think it will start to wear quite thin. And I think it's been clever that they've used the Firefly Funhouse to still keep him around and still keep, you know, the character or the characters of the entire gimmick still within, you know, viewing distance. So I thought that's been clever use of him. But yeah, as long as they continue to be patient with The Fiend, I think that will only benefit them more.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. If he came out every week, he'd lose something, although it'd still be pretty amazing. But yeah, we'll move on from that. And a bit more of the serious news is that the Fox deal is kind of impacting stuff. They want to have a proper brand split. I imagine quite a lot of fans would agree with that, considering the what's it called? The wild card rule or whatever the hell it was called. That was awful. But it's also passed on to the commentary team, which looks like it'll have Rene going to SmackDown and, oh my God, I forgot his name, Corey, going on one show or over rather than being on both and getting like embossed in like loads of different storylines and no defined role. So yeah, I think that's a promising sign. But what do you make of it? Are you one that wants like just one big ass roster, or are you for the brand split?
I'm for the brand split, considering how big their roster is. We've seen times when, and especially now with the wild card rule, although I don't think they really mention that specific phrase anymore.
No, they do not.
But we've seen whenever the brands start to get blended together, how the storylines on both shows tend to be quite similar. And we sort of see the same characters on both nights every single time. And I thought, you know, towards the, you know, towards last year when they really started with the proper brand split, so to speak, I thought it was really nice to have a different type of show, which SmackDown was offering. And it seemed to be a show that was highlighting some of the young, up-and-coming people or the people that haven't been given a chance. So I'm always in favor of keeping the brands separate, especially if they're going to keep as big a roster as they have at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Same for me. That nice little spell, probably when it started. I mean, SmackDown was such a unique thing, and then it kind of took turns being good and bad. I'd like to hopefully hope both of them be good at the same time, but I'd kind of like a separate identity to both shows. I'd just improve the viewing, and the fact that they're not, the one's going to be on Friday as well, that I think that'll help as well. But Clash of Champions, let's get into this, because I don't want a six-hour-long pod. Your overall thoughts to the build to do? It's like kind of sandwiched between SummerSlam and Hell in a Cell, which is a gimmicky one, but it's probably one of the better gimmicky ones, I think it's fair to say. So I think it's fair to call it a B pay-per-view, or even lower. But it seems to have a decent card. What's your overall thought?
Yeah, I think the card itself is quite exciting. There's definitely going to be some really, really good matches. I think, as you said, being sandwiched in, and especially on the backdrop of a big pay-per-view, one of the big four, I think it's always difficult to continue or start a long enough build for many of the matches. It's either sort of continuation from storylines that existed before, or with the new ones, trying to squeeze in as much as possible. So I think they've done an okay job. I think as we were discussing before the podcast, the shows have been, you know, improving quite a lot, and it's good to see that they seem to be paying a lot more attention to the show. Well, not to say that they weren't paying attention previously, but at least they're making them a lot more exciting than they used to be, and they're not just doing run-of-the-mill episodes where they phone it in. I think, you know, with 11 matches, I'm hoping it's not going to be too long a night. WWE, you know, can sometimes go a little bit overboard with how long their pay-per-views go, but I suppose with them having the network now, that's their prerogative.
Yeah, I think if you find that sweet spot of about 3.5 hours, maybe pushing to 4 if there's a good match on, I think that's fair. But once you get beyond 4, it's like, please kill me. This has gone too long. But yeah, three to four hours, I think, is the sweet spot for it, really. Let's get into the matches then. I'm on Wikipedia, so I'm not sure if this is going... I don't know how this is ranked, but I'm just going from bottom to top. So I'm not going in any like bad order or anything, but start off with what I probably think will be match of the night. Yeah, but maybe another one can rival it. AJ Styles v Cedric Alexander. A story that kind of probably has been rushed through in this last week or two. But regardless of that, I mean, the match itself, it should be brilliant.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, AJ has shown that he's a willing, you know, willing participant in helping some of the younger guys go, you know, be shown in the limelight. I think I think Cedric has benefited from the fact that one of the new writers is, I've forgotten his name, but he was part of 205 Live and he's been moved on to Raw. And he was moved on, you know, or brought into the mix on the recommendation of Paul Heyman. So he's been working quite close with Paul Heyman in terms of creative over the last couple of weeks. And you can see from, you know, the likes of Cedric getting a lot of attention, the Chad Gable getting a lot of attention. So he seems to have brought some of those 205 Live guys up with him. I think Cedric, he's very exciting. It will be interesting to know how you feel, but with regards to, let's say, there's some moves where every single time when he hits a big move and you know that it's going to be a two count, and then he acts like, you know, it's the biggest shock that the person's kicked out. Yeah. But he does that every single time. I think maybe if he did that a little bit less, maybe
I think Ali does that as well. It's very strange. Yeah,
maybe it's probably
a note from the Vince. You can't get near falls on big people without looking shocked.
Yeah, probably is. But I think it would have more impact if it happened, you know, at least once or twice in the match, opposed to six or seven times. And then as we've spoken with AJ, class act. He's going to be selling a lot. Not that it will be a bad thing, but I mean in terms of AJ always finds a unique way of selling for other people. So it will be interesting to see how much he's able to lift Cedric to his level and see what he can actually get out of Cedric. So yeah, I think it's a good shout for an undercover match of the night performance from both guys.
Yeah, I think that we've obviously seen AJ with Ricochet with a couple of brilliant matches as well. I think you can kind of expect similar with this, and this is Cedric's first feud since he's came up, really. I think he's obviously had the odd match and hit stuff and kind of had a feud with Drew McIntyre, but that didn't really go anywhere. But this is his first big opportunity on a pay-per-view, so I'm quite looking forward to it, really. I think if it doesn't open, I think it'll be one that take after one of the bad matches to try and get the crowd back alive. So yeah, I think this will one or two. We'll come on to the which one might rival it for match of the night, but I think it'll definitely be up there. Prediction: who do you think will win?
I think AJ. He's just gotten the belt. It will be a spirited effort from Cedric, but I think AJ has to keep the belt, keep the OC strong, and especially if they don't have the tag belt, they should at least be involved in one of the belts. So I guess it's going to be the US title going forward. Yeah, I think, but Cedric is going to have a really good showcase, and especially with them knowing that AJ is going to come out on top, I think that's going to give more incentive for AJ to sell so much for Cedric, just to try and help him up and give him a bit of the rub.
Yeah, I think he might even get like a dirty finish with Gallows and Anderson shenanigans on the outside. Maybe you can kind of build the Viking Raiders feud and get them involved, and that's how AJ wins or something. I think that would be kind of interesting as well. But yeah, I agree. I think AJ will win this ultimately one way or another. P-break match of the night, unfortunately, due to the cursed or treatment of the women's tag division and the belts. We've got Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross v. The Worst Name in the World, Fire and Desire, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. This match and this division, it's being treated like I imagine most would fear it'd be treated. And yeah, it's not good, and I'm not really looking forward to it. And at this stage, I think it's just wasting people like Oscar and Kairi Sane at this stage. I don't know what they're going to do with this division long term.
Yeah, I think it's been noted as well that Vince isn't necessarily the biggest fan of tag team wrestling. So if you then look at the fact that women's wrestling hasn't been a big mainstay of WWE, Well, it's been a mainstay, but in terms of being, you know, looked at the level that it should have been looked at, you then worry about adding those two together and saying tag team, which Vince doesn't really like, and also the fact that it's women's wrestling as well, which has had to fight to, you know, to get a spot at the table. I think it might need maybe a Stephanie or even, you know, anyone up higher up to really push for it, but it doesn't seem like there is anyone that is there higher up that is championing the women's tag team division. And I think that's what's led to it, you know, not getting as much attention as it could have had. I think it could have been a fun division, especially when Sasha and Bayley got the belts. I thought they were going to do a lot more with them as champions. They were, you know, quite a few fantasy booking storylines that people were picking out, which could have been really, really interesting. With regards to Alexa and Nikki Cross as champions, I've liked their story. I've liked the fact that, you know, usually with Alexa Bliss storylines where she has a best friend, she turns her back on them, and that's played a huge factor in this storyline where everyone's trying to warn Nikki, you know, about Alexa's ways. And to Nikki's credit and defense, she's saying, well, that may have happened to other people, but it's never happened to me. And, you know, I do like the fact that they've kept them together and not just done the same old thing of recycling an Alexa story and having her turn. The turn might happen later on, but I'm happy for them to be best friends at the moment now. Mandy and Sonya, I think Mandy is one of the girls that has really improved a lot over the last year or so. I think she's added quite a really cool arsenal. Those knee strikes look really, really good. And then Sonya, I think, is one of the sleeper cells in WWE. I think she's got, you know, the whole package in terms of, you know, the legitimate background, the legitimate MMA background. She's got a really, really good moveset. She can talk. She's confident. She's got the look. I think her having a really strong singles run, you know, babyface or heel, maybe even babyface at the moment with the lack of babyfaces on SmackDown, could be something that people could get behind. And then also we can't forget her background story, you know, of being a champion for LGBT community as well. I think they could do a really, really good story with her. With regards to the match itself, in terms of predictions, I can see them keeping the belts on Alexa and Nikki as long as they're staying friends, and there's been no hint of, you know, a potential turn by either one of those two. So I think the belts stay on them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think they'll keep the belts. I think they kind of want to keep Alexa Bliss relevant because she seems to be the go-to as a heel, this keeps her relevant for the time being. And as I mentioned, there's plenty of teams you can easily just chuck together or even have feuds with, Asuka and Kyrie or whatever. Won't be the one I'm looking forward to. But this one's actually been quite interesting. It's had a mixed build, but the last couple of weeks I think have actually been quite good. And this is Roman Reigns v Eric Rowan, which got announced as a no disqualification match on this SmackDown. Firstly, what did you make of this whole whodunit type storyline? I mean, we obviously saw it back with Steve Austin and all that, and we thought this might have been interesting, but no, it ended up kind of being a bit obvious, other than it not being, well, at the minute, not being Daniel Bryan as the main mastermind, but ultimately being Rowan. Do you think this is the start of a singles push or just fodder for Roman?
Unfortunately, I think fodder for Roman. I don't know if they, you know, if there's any long term plans for Rowan. I think they've built him up well, to be fair, over the last 2 weeks in terms of trying as much as they can to make him look like a threat to Roman. You know, because it's Roman Reigns, it's kind of hard to make anyone seem a threat to him. I think the storyline itself started off really well, and, you know, it could have tailored off in so many different ways. And I think the problem with WWE in these type of situations is sometimes they try to be too clever, Whereas some of the obvious, maybe simpler storylines is probably the best option to take. But I think sometimes they also, you know, I do think they look at some of the dirt sheets and see what's being written there and then try and swerve, you know, fans or try and serve the smart marks, so to speak, which can sometimes be to their detriment. And I think that was the case here. The story became really convoluted. If you know, you would assume that there's still a partner with that's been acting with Rowan. If not, then it just doesn't make sense, because then, you know, like, who was driving the forklift and how can he be, you know, be in that still photo, put, you know, but not be, you know, but not have an accomplice. It just wasn't a well-told story. And I also think the big issue for me was the fact that, you know, the reveal that it was Rowan came about because of that, you know, still photograph or highlighting of him, which wasn't even a clear picture. So I didn't understand why that was the point in time where Daniel Bryan had to overreact and see that, oh my God, it was Rowan. Whereas I thought the guy in the still picture looked exactly like the guy that had that shown in the last week as the red herring. So I didn't see why that specific point in time was the time that it needed to be the big reveal. I think they got that horribly wrong. In terms of the match itself, yeah, it's going to be, you know, how can Roman Reigns ever overcome these odds type of matches? But he's definitely going to come out on top. And yeah, I don't have any doubt that Roman will be winning, unless they've, you know, they've got something planned in terms of Daniel Bryan revealing that he was the mastermind of the whole thing. And he comes out and helps Rowan to beat up Roman Reigns. And then that then carries on into Hell in a Cell and maybe even Survivor Series.
I think this is just going to end up leading to, possibly, Daniel Bryan turning face-ish. Not go full baby face-ish, but it's going to end up being him and Roman against Rowan and Harper. I think that's how we could lead into it. Maybe not Harper. Maybe you could put someone else in there. But if they want to start using Harper again after his asking for his release and stuff like that, and think might as well get whatever, however long left on his contract out of him, an easy storyline, maybe just do them two v them two, and that can fill a pay-per-view with two, and then you've got another tag team that'll be interesting, at least. So I'm going to go Rowan to win, but I think we're going to get half a shenanigans or someone shenanigans, so I think that's how he'll win. But ultimately, I think we'll see Roman win the war rather than this battle, so I'll go Rowan to win this one. Becky Lynch v Sasha Banks. Obviously, I think it's fair to say the women's division post-WrestleMania hasn't had the same feel to it. I think, obviously, it suffered a bit with a very, very, very long feud with, oh my God, what's her name? What is her name, the blonde one? What's her name?
Which one?
The one Becky feuded with after WrestleMania.
Oh, Lacey Evans,
yes. God damn. Whew! That's not good.
Yeah, nasty.
Yeah. Oh, dear. That wasn't ladylike. oh, dear. But yeah, you had that feud, and it was just kind of, and then the whole Seth and Becky stuff, which wasn't great. So, yeah, I think this is kind of a turn back in the right direction. Obviously, we've had Sasha come back as a heel, which I think is the right decision. But firstly, what's your thoughts on Sasha coming back after so many months away throwing a paddy?
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, it's always interesting the time in which she was going to come back, you know, what the reasons were for her coming back. If, you know, there's never been really a confirmed reason why she did leave. I think it's all just speculation in terms of the reasoning behind that. But you would imagine, you know, maybe it was to do with frustration creatively with either how she was seeing herself as a character, and then also the buzz of AEW coming into the forefront. So maybe those things had to were big factors. But as I said before, it's all speculation. I think her coming back is always good for women's wrestling. She is one of, you know, the top wrestlers in the women's division, and, you know, in just world wrestling, she's got a huge, huge following. So that helps as well. And it's good to have her back as, you know, just a no nonsense badass. That's the character I think everyone fell in love with in NXT. You know, not necessarily a babyface, but the heel Sasha Banks. I think that's when she really, really honed in her skills and became her own. And coming back against Becky, I don't know if it was too soon to put her straight into the, you know, into a feud with Becky, considering, you know, how Becky hasn't really kicked on since WrestleMania, I don't think. So then coming up against Sasha Banks now, it's kind of like you've booked yourself into a corner, because can Sasha lose, you know, so early to after her comeback? And then on the other side, can Becky be affording to lose? You know, this is the woman ultimately that, you know, that beat Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania, as has been famously coined by Michael Cole every single time she makes an appearance. So I think that's my worry, is just the fact that they've booked themselves into a corner. I would imagine Sasha Banks is going to win, purely because she's just come back, and I don't see how cooling her momentum by her losing would benefit anyone. But also the issue for me is, if she wins, then is that not just setting a precedent to say, and, you know, anyone that's not satisfied, you can just down tools, leave, and then come back and you get a title shot. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think it's kind of wrong, but at the same time, I don't know who else she could feud with. Yeah. Like, I mean, Sasha could obviously have a crap match with Natalia, obviously that's who she beat up on her return and stuff like that, but then who would Becky fight? I mean, she's already scraped the bottom of that barrel, as I mentioned, Lacey Evans and Natalia. Don't think I could name someone else on Raw. Mine's gone a blank. I mean, Ruby Riott's injured, so you can't do that as a stopgap. The women's division's not been portrayed as it should, but you could probably easily do it for another pay-per-view or so, but with the way they've booked it, I think it kind of had to be Sasha. But yeah, it is a strange one. I think Sasha has to win this. If she loses, unless it's a stupid DQ finish or something like that, which will be kind of annoying, but I think Sasha has to win it. And I think that would be almost a good thing for Becky. I think, as you said, I think she's not really... I think it's an impossible task to almost find the levels of feuding with Ronda Rousey, because that was obviously main event and Ronda Rousey was the unstoppable force and stuff like that, and I think it's almost, you don't have an opponent like that, and it's someone to bounce off properly, whereas Becky, she's been stuck in crappy feuds, and I think this will hopefully be the thing that reignites that, and then if these two can feud and then extend it with the other part of the Four Horsewomen as well feuding and being intertwined, hopefully this will give some life back to the women's division. But yeah, I'm going to go for Sasha winning this one, because I simply think she has to, really. Next match, impromptu, well, kind of impromptu, it just kind of came out of nowhere a couple of weeks ago. We've got Shinsuke Nakamura against The Miz. I think this match has simply been created so The Miz can catch up to Chris Jericho in intercontinental titles. I don't think the match will be that great, because I think Shin's not been that good since he came up. I think his last great match was obviously that Sammy one in NXT. The Miz, he was probably the last relevant Intercontinental Champion, so happy days with that. But yeah, ultimately, I think this is just to get one over on Y2J, I suppose.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's definitely a jive at Chris Jericho. I think, you know, Miz is the ultimate company guy in terms of he's always, you know, willing to do anything for WWE, and I guess he's been rewarded by that with having such a, you know, such a long career with the company and also having such a long tie to the Intercontinental Championship. And I also assume that he's going to come out on top, and that's going to help try and you know, just remove Jericho's name from the record books. I don't think you could ever remove him from the history books, but at least from the Intercontinental record book, just to have a different name on there and not necessarily the AEW champion. And I can just imagine Michael Cole's going to have a field day week in, week out, reminding everyone that, you know, the Miz is the sole, you know, leader and on the leaderboard in terms of Intercontinental Championship reigns. I do wonder, with them having recently paired Sami Zayn and Shinsuke Nakamura, if there's anything to that in terms of momentum. If Shinsuke loses the title, where does that partnership then go?
Tag team division.
Woo! Yeah. Probably just track everyone in there. So I think that's the only chance that maybe Shinsuke has of maintaining the championship is the fact that they've just started this partnership with Sami Zayn. But yeah, I agree with you in terms of trying to get one over Chris Jericho might be, you know, might be the reason why the Miz takes the title.
Ah, Sami's feuding with The Undertaker now. It doesn't matter. I think Miz is going to win this one. Even if he loses it again on the next pay-per-view or even on SmackDown, I think he's just going to win it simply to just get rid of Jericho's name from the history books.
But I think you have to remember he has to win it, lose it, and win it again.
Exactly. He's going to lose it. He's going to lose it in between Hell in a Cell and win it back.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. Or even on, you know, they love doing title rematches the Tuesday after the pay-per-view. So, yeah.
Maybe just like wins it by about 4 or 5.
Make it the 24/7 title for the
day. Oh, my God. Yes. Yes, absolutely. I think it'll be an all right match, but I don't think it'll be anything too special, and ultimately the Miz will win. And yeah, when he's on Raw, Michael Cole will be, here comes the record holder for most Intercontinental Champion. It's going to be fun, that. Right, potential match of the night contender here, I think. Had a good build apart from this week where they weren't there, and the last couple of weeks they weren't there. The New Day, obviously Big E and Xavier Woods, against The Revival. I think this has been quite an interesting one. I like the pairing of The Revival with Randy Orton. I like the story they've told here. And I think this probably should be match of the night if it gets the time, but that's always the big if with the tag team division that doesn't have like the Shield in it or something like that. I think this could be match of the night, and I'm really looking forward to this. I think we could see something quite special if the WWE title match goes the way I think it will go, and I hope the Revival get gold as well. Hint.
I think my biggest worry is I'm looking at the card itself. It's likely that this match is going to be on the pre-show. I can see them putting the Cruiserweight title on there and then the SmackDown one, because they're definitely not putting the Raw one.
This is what the women's one's for.
Yeah, they like Alexa too much.
True.
I think to put on the pre-show, and you know, there's Mandy Rose, Alexa Bliss in one match. I doubt Vince, knowing Vince McMahon. And
I understand Vince, to be fair.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I can see this match being put on the pre-show, which I think might take away a little bit from the match if the crowd, you know, sometimes WWE has trouble with getting the crowd in before the pre-show starts. And then that kind of having those empty seats, you know, when they zoom out might take away a little bit from the match. But in terms of the match itself, I'm very excited for it. I think the Revival, for me, are the best tag team in the world. I really enjoy their old school heel like gimmick, and we know the New Day can bring it, you know, when required. They've shown time and time again that they can put on absolute slobber knockers. So I'm expecting a really, really good match. I've got really high standards for this one, and for me, this one's going to be my pick for low key match of the night. If they're really given time to go, I think. The fact that we haven't seen the New Day, apart from Kofi Kingston, for quite a while has been good to really play out the injuries. And I think they're going to be coming out looking for revenge, and the best people to try and silence that are the Revival. I'm hoping the Revival win this one.
Yeah, I think I've quite liked this. It's probably the first time the Revival have been put in an actual thing, a feud with a story as well. That's quite good. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the New Day have probably been the best tag team with the Usos for the last 5-ish years or something like that. So I think it's hopefully not on the pre-show, but I hope it just gets time regardless. I think this is probably, I know the Raw one won't be on there, but I think this will be a lot better than the Raw tag team one. But yeah, I'm with you. I hope the Revival win. The fact the New Day haven't been on TV for a while, hopefully it plays on the injuries and the Revival kind of take note of that. And this group v New Day, it can continue over multiple pay-per-views. I'd be quite happy for that. Cruiserweight title match then. Again, I always have to precursor this. Don't watch 205 Live. Like, I don't even know who one of these people are, to be honest. Yeah, so we've got Drew Gulak, who's obviously the champion, against Lince Dorado, who we know from the Lucha House Party, and Humberto Carrillo. Have you watched any of the build to this, or any interest in? I think the match will obviously be good because it's the Cruiserweight title and stuff like that. But have you followed the build to this?
I have followed it a little bit. I think, you know, Drew Gulak had a lot of pressure coming into this title reign, considering how much I thought Buddy Murphy has done over the past year, or just over a year or so, where he really, really uplifted the Cruiserweight division and forced, it's almost like he forced everyone to step up to his level. So I thought he did a really, really good job there. So I think Drew Gulak isn't that style of wrestler. So it was always going to be difficult to try and move things to on a different wavelength. It will be interesting to see if he keeps the title, perhaps just purely because, you know, they're winding down 205 Live. Maybe he does keep it, and then we'll see where the brand itself gets moved, whether or not, you know, they go to NXT and they get blended in there, or, you know, with the rumors of the third hour for SmackDown still being quite high interest for WWE, it could possibly also be put onto SmackDown Live or something like that. So we'll see how that goes. In terms of, yeah, as you said, Lince Dorado, we know him from Lucha House Party. Very good area lead, so that's going to be I think he's going to be the workhorse of the match. And then Humberto Carrillo, he is a Mexican wrestler. He used to be Ultimo Ninja in Mexico before he joined WWE. I think he joined last year, just after. Yeah, so in October last year. And he started off in NXT, didn't really have that many performances. So maybe that's why people would, if anyone would have seen him, they probably would have seen him on NXT rather than 205 Live, considering I think more people would watch NXT than 205 Live. And then he sort of had a couple of matches on NXT, and he then joined 205 Live in January. I think Buddy Murphy was having those open challenges, and I keep wanting to call him Ultimo Ninja, Humberto then challenged Buddy Murphy, and he put in a spirited effort, but he did lose. And you know, after the match, that's when Drake Maverick actually then revealed that Carrillo was going to be staying with the 205 Live roster. He then went on to compete at the Access show, you know, that Worlds Collide tournament.
Yeah,
he had a really good showcasing. There was backstage, they were really happy with the work that he did, and maybe that's been the thing that's propelled him into title contention for this week. It will be interesting to see how he handles maybe the big stage of WWE, as you know, WWE likes to put it as, you know, they, and I suppose it's true, they are the big league. So this is going to be his first showcase to the WWE wider universe. So it will be interesting to see how much they allow him to showcase his skill, and whether or not he will be featured in this match. Even though, as I said, I expect Lince Dorado to be the workhorse. I think they might give a few spots to Humberto just to introduce him to the wider audience.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Having not followed anything, I think Drew will keep the title for some reason. I'll just go along with that. If you give it to Lince, you can't have the Cruiserweight title on TV every now and again. It's ruin the mystique. But yeah, I think Drew will just keep it because he's probably the biggest name there. Kofi v. Randy, probably the best rejuvenated story after the week build to SummerSlam, I think it's fair to say. A lot better third time around, I think it's, you have to say, but second time in modern times. I think this is going to be good. I think obviously had a weird finish at SummerSlam. I think this will be a lot more definitive. This is like the first time in like a decade I'm actually feeling Randy Orton. Like, he actually cares and seems interested. And the thing with the revival seems like it's got legs. And this is the first time an opponent against Kofi's been booked quite strongly. So I'm feeling Randy Orton to win this.
Yeah, I think Kofi retains. I did wonder if, you know, heading into Fox, I always thought Brock Lesnar was going to hold the title and headline that Fox move. But it seems like they've taken a real liking to Kofi. Vince has really, really been impressed from the mumbles from behind the scenes. It seems like Vince has really, really been impressed with Kofi's run and how Kofi has handled himself as champion, and also the lead up to becoming champion. So that's always good if Vince is impressed with you. I think in terms of storyline wise, good versus evil, you'd imagine that's why Kofi would come out on top. I think the storyline itself has been told really, really well. I do appreciate, as I hinted to earlier, I do appreciate it that, you know, at least the rest of the New Day have been selling injuries. Whereas WWE, sometimes we see guys get brutally attacked, and then they're on the next show either the next day or the next week, and you're just thinking, well, then what was the point of that beatdown? At least sell it. And it's been good to see that the New Day have sold it, and it helps create that underdog story for Kofi. And I do love that they've, with this whole build, that they've continued to play on, you know, and tug at the strings of the history that Randy Orton and Kofi have over the years. And I think, yeah, I think when Randy Orton is interested in a program, he can be really, really fun. And it's always fun seeing an RKO. I do hope we get to see one, even if Randy is not going to win. And then I wonder, do you think that they're going to just allow these guys to be, you know, to go one-on-one and there'll be an outcome from that? Or do you think that the tag teams get involved?
I think they'll try and keep it quite independent. I think the fact that they're obviously kind of against each other anyway in an earlier match, I think that'll kind of keep them busy, and even kayfabe, or they'll be tired, they can't be arsed coming out. so I'll go with that one. I think with a story like this, I think you kind of want to keep it as one-on-one as much as possible, because you had the messy finish at SummerSlam. You don't want BS on the outside where you've got Kofi doing dives off onto 700 people and stuff like that. I think it'd just kind of be a bit cliche and stuff like that. I'd kind of like the seriousness of the story to kind of be presented in a proper 1v1 match. I think don't muddy the waters. I'll stick with Randy, though. I think Kofi's run out of people to fight, so he's got to fight someone twice, and he's already done that with Randy, so he'll have to go again somewhere. you can't just keep recruiting randomers from Raw like he did with Joe. I think that'll be pot. If they get the storytelling right, that could be match of the night, but maybe not from a wrestling point of view. Wiki's got the Universal title match, but I'll save that for last. Bailey v. Charlotte. Again, a very strange storytelling with this, considering Bailey's a heel on Raw, but she's a face on SmackDown. I don't get how this works. But it's very strange. Obviously, Bailey's turned kind of heel, I think you have to say, on Becky by hitting her with chair, confirming they're still friends with Sasha. But Charlotte Flair is... she's a heel, so yeah, this feud's been weird. But again, this is probably the first time Bailey as a champion's against someone serious. But again, she's been booked to look weak in the build up again. It's been strange. They just seem to not be able to get Bailey right at all. This is another strange match in the women's division.
Yeah, when Bailey came up, I thought she was going to be the easiest person to book for. I thought the story was written for her already, and they could have even rehashed it. They could have done the exact same storyline as NXT, and people still would have loved it. She was thought of as the female John Cena. So I don't know how they screwed that up. Obviously, I still think very talented wrestler. It took me a while to get used to her promos, I think. Maybe I was wanting a more typical...
Still a bit boring.
Yeah, that's the thing. I always thought maybe she could improve that or take it a different way. But I think I've just settled with the fact that that's just her style of delivery. And I think that's helped me at least get more used to them and be okay with them. In terms of the storyline, I do appreciate the fact that... and you've alluded to it now with the confusion of, is she babyface, is she heel? I like the fact that she's not necessarily babyface or heel. She's just being loyal to her friend, which is what any normal person would do. Stick with their best friend. I think she's best friends with Carmella. But obviously storyline wise on TV, her and Sasha Banks are best friends. So her being, loyal to Sasha Banks and just sticking up for a friend and staying with her friend is a really, really good way to blend blend in a bit of edge to Bailey, who I thought was quite boring a bit in terms of her character. I think the fact that she's had this, in inverted commas, change of attitude, which always comes with the standard, now I'm wearing black. It seems that seems to happen all the time, the day after someone has a heelish turn. Mm. I think she keeps the title for that reason. The fact that she's got a little bit more edge to her. If her and Sasha both have the belts, and you know, they for these I think the brand split will only happen once SmackDown officially goes to Fox, so maybe they can squeeze in a month where there is the interaction between the two of Sasha and Bailey as champions, and just, you know, running both divisions as best friends. I think that could be really fun before they officially split the brands. But then again, the thing is, as I always say in the WhatsApp group chat, but Vince, that's the issue. You know, we know that Charlotte is the golden girl of WWE, and she is, you know, she has to catch up to her father's record at some point in time. So there's always that chance that they do put the belt on Charlotte. But I don't think at this point in time she needs it as much as Bailey. I think Bailey and Sasha as dual champs of both divisions running WWE could be quite fun. And I'm hoping that she's able to retain. In terms of Charlotte herself, they seem to have cooled her down a little bit. I'm hoping they're not turning her face. There's hints that they're trying to turn her face. I hope they don't. I think Charlotte as a heel, you know, Charlotte should always be a heel. That's who Charlotte is in terms of as a character. In terms of real life, I don't think there's a nicer person on the roster. And it's always quite interesting seeing the difference between her in real life and the heel character she plays. But I think it just runs in her blood to be a heel, whereas on TV, whereas actually the person is a really, really nice person.
I pretty much agree with everything you've said there. I think Charlotte just simply, I don't think she will ever need the title again, to be honest. I think she just does fine work outside of it. Yeah, just don't be a babyface, even if you're kind of in between. Just don't go full-blown babyface again. It just didn't work. It just doesn't suit her. And yeah, Bailey, she finally needs to get a big win from somewhere. I mean, it's all great beating Ember Moon, who you've booked into oblivion and stuff like that. But I think she does need a big one to kind of legitimize her. And build on this four horsewoman stuff one way or another. And if you want to do a big match at WrestleMania or Survivor Series or something like that, actually build to it this time. And this is a good storyline to keep them all involved one way or another.
Yeah, and I think that has to be the main event of WrestleMania at this point in time. In my opinion, I don't know if you agree, but there's nothing else standing out as much as a four horsewoman. You know, I don't know how they would then play it with the brand split. But
yeah,
some sort of fatal four way where, you know, they see who's the true, you know, the true best, so to speak. And I really think that they got to build that and start building that from now. They've got all four in some sort of feud that ties together. Start planting the seeds as soon as now and let that carry on all the way to Mania. And I think it could really, really be a huge, huge, huge match.
Yeah, I think that is main event potential. It will be a bit of a bugger on getting them all on the same show without destroying the other show. I presume it would be Raw that I'd have them all. But, I mean, if they're all on one show, I mean, you could have Asuka, Kairi Sane, etc., Carmella, etc., all on one show, and it'd kind of be fresh, I suppose. But yeah, it'd be interesting to sort out anyway. I will go for a Bailey win myself on this one. Did you say you said Bailey as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
right. Confusing storyline number whatever we're up to with this one. We'll start with the Raw tag team title match. Seth v Braun. the Good Brothers for some reason. in Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler, who've been put together, I think that's fine, but just being put straight into this storyline is very weird. Pretty much the only thing that's of interest is whether there's shenanigans that lead into the main event, or I presume will be the main event. Firstly, what's your thoughts on the story? I think it's been a bit messy.
Yeah, I haven't enjoyed it at all. I'm sorry to say, I really haven't enjoyed it. I think it's one of those situations where don't overcomplicate it, WWE. This is the thing, you know, this is one of those things where in the tag match, obviously, you're going to have the commentators speaking about how would they ever work together. You know, they can't stand each other, that whole build up. But they do, you know, one of them has to turn on the other or at least cause the team to lose the belts. I don't see them being tag champs after the night's over. And then from there, I think it would then blend into the main event itself. But I think with the tag match itself, I just don't know why. Maybe you can explain, but why Ziggler and Roode? You've got so many teams. You know what I mean? There is a plethora of tag teams in the tag team division that you could have built up and actually given them a title shot. I don't like the character that they're giving Roode at the moment. I think Roode in a suit, you know, considering himself better than everyone else is the perfect Bobby Roode. Yeah. They don't need to do anything else other than that from my point of view. Dolph Ziggler is Dolph Ziggler. He's probably one of the best workers in the company. I probably put him up there. Yeah, and definitely one of the best sellers in the company as well. But he's been so diluted over the years that you can't really invest into him that much. I think he needs a break from the company for a while and then come back and find some other, you know, gimmick or something else, move away from being Shawn Michaels light. But they're going to be the champs, so that's going to be interesting. Hopefully they make them as champions, they make them just, you know, champions that are passing the belts on to another tag team, because I'm not a fan of this at all.
Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, if it had proper time and you define the character more about Robert Roode rather than Dolph Ziggler, I think it could work.
Mm-hmm.
But they've won that tag team turmoil match and then they've just been the stooges for the OC. Mm-hmm. Whereas the OC is already the stooges for AJ. That don't make sense. it's just very strange. I mean, this should be the Good Brothers. You could probably use, you could probably even have used like the Revival in here if you didn't use them on the SmackDown ones, obviously.
Viking and the Revival are all.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't matter. the Viking Raiders are seemingly going face after this week, which probably a better move, but you could have used them. The other tag teams I'm not thinking of. AOP, yeah, that'd be a good one, actually. That'd be a good way to announce them back. Don't even know what show they're on. but yeah, it just seemed weird to put these two together. It should have been the Good Brothers, and that would have made it a lot more interesting. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see where it goes. I do kind of hope it becomes a Robert Roode-led thing rather than Dolph Ziggler-type thing. I agree with you, Ziggler. His last good run was when he feuded with The Miz, but outside of his feud with The Miz, it kind of just went back to being meh. Had a nice little thing with Drew, and his feud with Seth was quite good, but outside of them things, it's not been the best, I don't know, three-ish years probably for Ziggler, maybe even longer. It's just a very, very weird thing, but yeah, I suspect these two will win, and probably hand the titles over to the Viking Raiders at some point, I presume. The main event, the Universal title match. I'm not asked about this match in the slightest, if I'm honest. I think we discussed this on a variety of pods. Braun's just not... I'm just not interested in Braun anymore, and I think Seth's going to win this, and obviously we know what the next match is for this title, and I think that's how the show's going to close, is with The Fiend dropping both of them, probably.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be okay with that. I don't want The Fiend in the title picture.
He's just there, though. Yet. He's there. He's already
he
confirmed.
Doesn't need it.
He does.
He need it. Oh, man. I would have preferred The Fiend taking out The Undertaker instead of that segment that they had with Sami Zayn.
I was waiting for him to take out Stone Cold, to be fair, on Raw. I was really waiting for it. When he came out at the end, I was like, he's going to get knocked. He's going to get knocked by The Fiend. He name-checked him earlier on. It's happening, and it just didn't. It's just annoying. But yeah, it's a weird one. Sorry, I interrupted your explanation. Why would you want to?
The Fiend is always a good interruption, I think, at this point in time. And then also just the last point on The Fiend. You know when he fixed the clock?
Yes.
It seems to be the date that Undertaker debuted. If I'm not.
I thought it was the date of Hell in a Cell. More interesting.
I think it's the date that Undertaker debuted. So hopefully there's something to that, and I think that's maybe why I was kind of expecting him to be the one to confront the Undertaker. Rather put him there, let him retire the unretirable or never retiring Undertaker, but do the gimmick of him retiring him. We know we'll see Undertaker in another one of the, you know, Saudi tour events or, you know, a WrestleMania, because I don't know if he's ever going to retire. But I think that's where The Fiend would be best utilized, is finally correcting the wrong of the match that they had back in the day when Bray Wyatt was coming up, and give, you know, and Undertaker just passing that mystique torch to The Fiend, I think would be quite fitting. In terms of, yeah, you can see I'm stalling on talking about the main event. I don't know who wins it. Seth hasn't really, for me, he hasn't really done it. I think his best run recently was when he was IC champion.
Yeah.
And he was carrying it as the workhorse title, as it's famously known as. And I thought that was a much harder run than this current run as champion. And this is, you know, Seth Rollins that's just beaten Brock Lesnar. And yet he doesn't have as much momentum as you'd expect from being someone that's beaten Brock Lesnar. Whether or not they give the belt to Braun, it's interesting to see if they would give it to him. He has had issues, you know, he has rubbed people high up in the company the wrong way at times, which maybe has led to him not being pushed as much as many people would have expected or liked, especially considering, you know, just his physical appearance. He's a rare breed, and not many of those just come through the door. I think maybe because And maybe this goes to a lot of the championship matches from this pay-per-view, is just the fact that Seth hasn't held the belt for too long, so they might just want to keep it with him and try and, you know, continue to build him up and make him stronger. But out of interest, I wouldn't mind seeing Braun win this match, just to see how they would book Braun as champion. But then also, if your theory is correct that, well, I think it's more solid than a theory, but I'm trying to squash it down to just a theory, I'm hoping. If Bray is to be involved in the Universal Championship picture, surely it can't happen with Braun as champion, because you'd assume then The Fiend is going to be selling way more than he should be.
Or will he? If he just pisses through Braun, how else are you going to announce him as a monster? But no, I think it'd be interesting, because there's obviously a very obvious story to tell with Braun, with the whole Wyatt family stuff there, which might be the tempting thing to go for, but the more WWE story to tell is Beast Slayer, Monster Slayer, Fiend Slayer gets destroyed. You know what I'm saying? It's, I think that's probably the gimmicky shit they'll go for with Seth. They'll try and call him the Fiend Slayer, and then he'll probably get beat in 2 minutes, which would be cool. I presume it would be in a Hell in a Cell match. But I think either way, I think the fact that they've announced it ahead of time, I don't know if it's official, but Bray announced it on Firefly Funhouse. I presume he's not bullshitting and he can do what he wants nowadays. But if I think they should have possibly saved him, like attacking him afterwards if they were going to do it, rather than just announce it randomly.
To add to that, I think it was more to address the issue, announcement. It was the arena where Hell in a Cell is going to be.
Oh, okay.
They're the ones that actually announced. That you know Bray Wyatt was going to challenge either Seth Rollins, or Braun Strowman for the championship. So
that's hella stupid.
So yeah. So I think it's Golden One Center in California is where it's going to be, and they put out a tweet. I think it was advertising, you know, trying to obviously sell tickets. And I think WWE, which I thought was a smart way, just thought they would get in front of it and at least address it in that sense. And that's where the rumor then kicked in that Bray was going to be involved in the title picture going forward.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I thought it was just a problem on their part, but no, that does make sense. Ultimately, I think Seth will win. Maybe it's a bit dodgy or something like that, but ultimately I think the show's going to finish with The Fiend battering them, and he's just going to be doing his flashy light thing to finish the show. I think that's how we'll go with this one. But that's our preview. Good. What do you reckon? Good show, bad show?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good show. I think WWE has stepped it up over the last couple of months. And I've never had an issue with the wrestling, the in-ring action with WWE, in terms of my biggest criticism of the company of late. The in-ring has always been really, really good, and they've got a really strong roster. It's just more the creative that seems to have been an issue with them doing a lot of things that are quite stale or just not creative. So bell to bell, I think all these matches could really be strong matches, and I'm expecting a good show. Just hoping they don't drag it out too long.
Yeah, that's the worry for me as well. I agree. I think it'll be a good show, but we will finish up there today. We will be back with the review whenever, probably next week, some point, I imagine. But yeah, thank you everyone for listening. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.